Come right in, pull up a chair. It's time once again to gather around the gaming table with your friends at The Gaming Gang, proudly sponsored by Victory Point Games. This time around, Elliot will be reviewing Cthulhu Gloom from Atlas Games and Krabby Birthday from Northstar Games. Jeff will be reviewing Field Commander Napoleon from Dan Versen Games and the Legendary Encounters line of miniatures from Reaper Miniatures. We'll have news, views, and more on this episode of The Gaming Gang. Now here's your hosts, Jeff McAleer and Elliot Miller.
Hi, I'm Jeff McAleer.
I am Elliot Miller.
And welcome back. Hey, Elliot, happy anniversary.
Thanks, man. You too.
Yay!
Beautiful.
Yes, we are celebrating our first year. We have been producing the podcast as well as the website for a year. And we have a big contest going on. And one lucky winner is going to walk away with a big truckload of games, although it would actually be a fairly small truck. And we'll talk about that in just a little bit.
All right. That sounds like a bargain to me.
I would think it's free.
You know, it's funny because it's been a year and yet it seems like 10. It's like it was only yesterday.
But you just said it seems like 10 years.
Oh, Freudian slip. Sorry.
So how would it be feeling like yesterday if it feels like 10 years? Have you been
drinking
again? Hey,
I've been watching
again?
Doctor Who, okay?
The new one or?
Yes, the new one.
I don't know. I've watched the first few episodes of the first season with the latest Doctor.
The latest Doctor? See, I'm up to the David Tennant ones now.
Right. Well, after David Tennant, there's another Doctor. I want to say the actor's name is Matt Smith.
Yeah, I haven't got up to him yet. He looks kind of like a schmo, but, you know, I have no idea.
I don't know. He just seems a little young to be the Doctor. Although I have to admit, the redhead who's his companion is pretty hot.
I don't know. I like Billie Piper a lot.
Yeah,
you know, Rose.
Fine. Yeah, I know who you're talking about. Yeah, she's a...
And I really liked Christopher Eggleston. He was excellent.
I liked him too. I was very surprised at the end of the first season with him that he was already regenerating. But he's actually a pretty well-known actor in England. And I think his line of thinking was he didn't want to get typecast as the Doctor.
Well.
But it's kind of funny that you mentioned that because I've actually started watching some of the really old Doctor Who. And I'm not talking Tom Baker,
oh my God,
Doctor Who.
Pre-Tom Baker?
I'm talking, yes, the first Doctor.
Where he was like 120 years old?
I believe he was 118. But anyway. Yes. So I've been kind of checking those out a little bit. Kind of funny you mentioned Doctor Who.
Huh, there you go.
And of course, Torchwood, the new series season, although in England they call it a series. They're on episode, I believe, episode 9 of the 10 episode story arc Friday night on...
What, Stars?
Stars, yeah.
See, I'm sorry, I don't have Stars. All I've got is Netflix, so I've only seen up to, what is it, Children of Miracles or whatever that...
The story arc right now is Miracle Day. Yeah. The other was Children of Earth.
Children of Earth, which I thought was probably the best Torchwood series I had seen to date. It was so good.
Yeah, it was. It was very good.
Yep.
Miracle Day is pretty good, too. A little too talky.
Yeah.
But it's still pretty good. So, shall we move on to our gaming news?
Oh, we're going to talk about games?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
No, welcome to the Doctor Who Hour. Featuring Bob McNutwitch and Alex Summerners.
Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. North and South America. All the ships and clippers at sea. Let's go to France, flat.
WizKids has announced that in mid-November, they're going to release a relaunch of Mage Knight, the miniatures game, but as a board game. Designed by Vlada Chvátal. I hope I got that one right.
You.
Yes, thank you. He's the designer of Through the Ages, Galaxy Trucker, Dungeon Lord. So you've got a few of his games. Yes.
I have all three of those.
There you go. So I knew that. I was looking through your collection long distance. Psychically, I was doing that. Mage Knight is going to throw you and up to three other Mage Knights into the sprawling and ever-changing world of the Atlantean Empire. Build your armies, defeat bands of marauding enemies, and eventually conquer cities in the name of the mysterious Void Council. As a Mage Knight, you must control your reputation and walk the line, or embrace the role of benevolent leader, or even brutal dictator. accumulate fame and experience to acquire powerful spells and abilities, then use your power to influence units to join your ranks. You're going to have a lot of different campaign options, including competitive and co-op play. The game itself will come with 240 cards, 8 pre-painted miniatures, 196 tokens, 20 map tiles, 54 mana crystals, 7 mana dice, 2 game maps, and 2 rule books. My gosh, it's going to weigh like 40 pounds. Supposedly, it's going to have excellent replayability, and there are expansions in the works already.
See,
well, it's Mage. It's Mage Knight. It was a collectible miniatures game at one point, I believe.
Yeah, I'm waiting for the vehicle expansion to come out. Mage Knight Rider.
And I believe there'll be a special David Hasselhoff figure.
Sweet. In bathing suit, which is, of course, even better.
Maybe for you it would be.
For this show, since we're celebrating our first birthday with a big birthday promotion, I thought that my news stories would focus on some other promotional items available out there right now.
Right now!
So first up is Fantasy Flight Games. FFG has jumped into the book publishing industry and is releasing 2 books based on popular games that will gain you an exclusive card if you purchase them. The first novel is Free Fall, based on the Android board game Dark Dystopian Future Universe, and is written by New York Times bestselling author William H. Keith. Who? In Free Fall, it's the future, and murder is still an all too common occurrence. When an influential lawyer is brutally murdered at the top of the Beanstalk, Earth's towering exo-atmospheric elevator used for interplanetary trade, Captain of Detectives Rick Harrison finds himself on the hunt for a killer. The printed copy of Free Fall will feature a form in the back of the book that you can fill out and mail in for an exclusive event card. The event card, entitled We're Tracking You in Free Fall, will make the Beanstalk a dangerous place to be. This offer is only available to purchasers of the paperback version of the book. The second novel to be released is Ghouls of the Miskatonic. It's the first novel in the Dark Waters trilogy, written by New York Times bestselling author Graham McNeil.
Who?
Yeah, see? Did you say who or who?
No, I went who? I guess I don't read the New York Times, so.
Miskatonic University professor Oliver Grayson is attempting to return his former colleague's sanity. Meanwhile, the sanity of his student, Amanda, is threatened by nightly dreams of a figure beyond human conception, stirring in the fathomless depths of the ocean.
David Hasselhoff. In a bathing suit.
The novel is, of course, based upon the Lovecraft world from the Arkham Horror board game. Each printed copy of Ghouls of the Miskatonic will feature a back-of-the-book insert that you can fill out and mail in for Professor Oliver's exclusive ally card. Again, this offer is only available to purchasers of the paperback. The books are already available for order on Amazon.com. Just FYI. Plus, they hit them at Gen Con.
And you can get them on the Fantasy Flight website, I would assume.
You know, I looked there, and it still said pre-order, so.
Huh, wow.
Weird.
Mayday Games announces Tok Tok Woodman, a Korean dexterity game by Gemblow. Hey, I did not make up the name of the company, okay? It's a game for the whole family. Tok Tok is a quick party game with gameplay lasting about 10 minutes. It's a twisted take on Jenga. Players take turns chopping at a tower of bark, attempting to gather the most outer bark and not get any of the central bark, which accrues negative points.
Well, it's riveting me so far.
Well, here's the thing. Mayday Games, they say it's a Korean game, but they're not telling anybody it's actually a North Korean game. So what you're going to get is actually a piece of gnarled wooden log and a small hatchet.
Knock, knock. Oh, sorry.
Tok, tok. Tok, tok. Oh, I kid. Yes. According to Mayday, Tok Tok is a fun, fast-paced game of dexterity that many have described as a reverse Jenga. With over 10,000 copies sold in Korea, this hit game is now taking the U.S. by storm. Maybe that was that storm that hit the East Coast recently.
Tok Tok Irene, I believe.
Play from 2 to 7 players as you become a woodman, or woman, trying to take down some bark, plus 1 point each, without knocking off the center pieces, minus 5 points each. You get 2 chops with your axe each turn, and the game continues until all the bark is gone, or the axe is in somebody's head. Okay, I threw that last part in. Tok Tok Woodman is great for players ages 5 and up. Axe your friends to play this fall when Tok Tok Woodman crashes into store shelves.
Does it come with an actual axe?
I have no clue. I'm just being nice for the family gamers out there. You know damn well I will not be playing Tok Tok Woodman. You might.
I might.
Because you have children. I don't.
And if any time you can teach them good tree chopping skills, you know, you might want to take advantage of that.
Could see actually showing up at one of the folks that I game with, one of their houses, and it's like, yeah, we're going to play some Power Grid. Okay, excellent. But first, we're going to play some Tok Tok Woodman.
You lose 5 points, buddy.
That's right. You knocked off that piece of central bark. You're out the door.
This September 10th. Wizards of the Coast is hosting a magic celebration at hobby stores worldwide. Every participant will be able to take part in a free Magic the Gathering Mini Masters tournament. A Mini Masters tournament is simple. Each player needs a single booster pack of magic cards. Without looking at the contents, each player opens his or her pack and adds in 3 of each basic land. Then they shuffle them all up and...
Whoa, time out. Without looking at the contents.
Yes.
Each player will open up their booster pack and take out 3 basic land cards?
Okay. Without looking at the contents.
How would you do that without looking at the contents?
Each player opens his or her pack and adds in from separate piles provided by other people 3 of each basic land. So you end up with a booster pack plus a bunch of land.
Right. So, the land is sitting there on the table for you to select. You go. Gotcha. Thank
no
you.
Problem. Probably all land cards that they folded up and made into big towers over at Gen Con.
Could be. Yes.
So then they shuffle them up and play a game of Magic just like normal. Because players don't know what cards are in their deck, Mini Masters offers up the same surprises players get when they open up a fresh new pack of Magic cards.
Ah, that fresh new magic smell. Card pack smell.
Is the rare you're hoping to get going to help you beat your opponent? Or will you lose the game but still walk away happy with the cards you managed to crack? Mini Master is great for letting you play with new cards while still keeping the excitement of opening a new booster. Everybody receives a free booster pack of Magic 2012 to play with. Plus, you'll receive an extra pack for each round of the tournament you win. So, you could win up to 5 free booster packs, and it doesn't cost you anything. Finally, players participating in a Magic Celebration event can receive a code card from the retailer for the gaming platform of their choice for a cool digital item for Duels of the Planeswalkers 2012, which just came out in June.
Mm-hmm.
You can visit the Wizards of the Coast website to find a participating retailer near you. I may actually go to this. I'm not sure.
Cool. When we were into Magic, do you recall there being a lot of excitement when you would open up a booster pack?
I don't know. Yeah, I remember initially there were some times where we would go out and get like 10 booster packs.
More than that.
You know, and then because we did end up with a goodly set of cards to.
Oh my gosh, yeah, we had quite a few card boxes filled, you more so than I, but I don't recall. I mean, if we ran across something that looked like it was pretty cool, we were like, oh, sweet. But I don't remember there being a whole lot of excitement just opening up the booster.
No, that's true. Well, you know, I do remember opening them in the car after getting them. You remember?
Yeah. Well, there were sometimes you were opening them up to see if there was something in there you could just walk back into the store and sell
them. Hey, you want this... Mox Pink?
Mox Populi? I don't know, whatever. But they were going for like a few $100.
Yep.
You want to trade me some more boosters for this? Cool. It's kind of nice, that whole promo from Wizards of the Coast. That's kind of
coming
cool.
up Saturday.
Clever Mojo Games has launched an expansion to Alien Frontiers on Kickstarter. Alien Frontiers Factions gives each player specialties that no one else can do with their faction backers. Choose from 8 different factions. Korex Conglomerate, Dark Space Explorers, Homesteaders Union, New Gaia Engineers, Proxima Centauri Scholars, Scavenger Fleet, Smugglers Alliance, and Uranian Syndicate.
Those are the ones you got to watch out for.
I was waiting for a Uranus joke. But anyway, factions will give you such special abilities as controlling the terraforming station, power of alien tech, reaping rewards from conflict, and more. You can stop by the Alien Frontiers Factions Kickstarter page for more details on these abilities. Alien Frontiers Factions also comes with agenda cards, which introduce new ways of achieving victory points. You can obtain additional victory points during gameplay or at the final scoring. Winning will become more difficult, though, with the option to play with up to 5 players. Clever Mojo plans to release even more expansions to Alien Frontiers with the kickstart of Alien Frontiers Factions, and they're already halfway there to their funding. They'll be releasing a series of boosters for the Alien Frontiers Factions expansion, which will expand the expansion to even more expansiveness. So you'll get more alien tech cards, faction boards, and more.
So can we assume that from here on out, Clever Mojo's kickstarting everything?
Yes, and I have an issue with that.
Tell me, Jeff. Tell me your issue.
I've mentioned it before. Somebody out there is going to kill the whole Kickstarter goose.
Yeah, well, it's going to have a saturation point.
And I talked to some people already, and they're telling me that, you know what, they don't even bother going to Kickstarter anymore because there's just too much stuff on there. Mm-hmm. And I thought Kickstarter was supposed to be for startup companies, not for companies that are already in existence who have product out there. So now you see Clever Mojo, Tasty Minstrel Games, Griffin Games. I know people out there are going to say, well, you know, what's the difference between a P500 on, let's say, GMT or Lock and Load and Kickstarter? There's no difference, is there? And to me, there is. The P500 is basically saying, hey, you know, this is the game that we have in development. Let us know what you think. Put in a pre-order. And then once it's ready, we'll ship it out. We've already heard stories, and I'm not mentioning any companies, but we've heard stories about companies that had Kickstarter funding. They met their funding. They got the games in, and then they went to a convention and sold those games at the convention. And people who had already sat there and paid to have that game produced didn't get a copy yet.
Yep. Yep.
And you got Kickstarter. Now Springboard is out there. I have absolutely no issues with them. I don't have issues with Kickstarter either. It's these companies that are suddenly saying, you know what? We're not going to bother investing in our own product. You invest for us. And I don't think that's right. I don't think if you're an established company, are you telling me Clever Mojo didn't make enough money with their 2 print runs of Alien Frontiers to finance their factions expansion?
And you know what? If it's already halfway kickstarted, obviously there's a market for it.
Right. Well, we know there was a market for Alien Frontiers because they sold out of 2 print runs. And I'm not like trying to rip on Clever Mojo Games. I don't know. Tasty Minstrel is another example. Tasty Minstrel had quite a few different titles out there. Now suddenly they're a Kickstarter company. Well, you know what? If you're going to run a game company and you have an established game company, then maybe you should finance your own products.
Dun, dun.
Do a P500. Well, do a P500. People can tell you, do I want this or not?
Yeah, that would definitely work. I mean, I can see where it's going to, like anything, you know, it's going to get overused and then people are going to, what is the phrase? Till somebody ruins it for everybody.
Yeah, they're going to kill the golden goose. Once again, just sharing my opinion, I just don't know why these companies who have gone out there and made money are now turning around and saying, hey, we're back on Kickstarter again.
Yeah. Well, I got to admit, when you mentioned that one in particular, it seemed a little strange. But hey, more power to them.
Whatever. There you go. Hey, it's not our game. It's not our company. You know, I'm sure they're gonna do quite well, and a lot of people are going to line up to play it. I remember when you did the review for Alien Frontiers, I mentioned that, you know, I thought it was a pretty decent game, but I didn't think it was as great as everybody was making it out to be.
Right. Oh, I enjoyed it. I mean,
yeah, it's an enjoyable game, but it sure wasn't Game of the Year in my book.
USAopoly.
What about USAopoly?
Though Jeff and I are not big fans of Monopoly, almost everybody owns at least one version of the game because I do actually.
I know you do. I don't.
Fine.
So don't say everybody.
I said almost everybody.
Okay, there we go.
Because sometimes you just...
Everyone but Jeff.
Everyone on the planet. You just can't avoid playing it, as it is the biggest selling game of all time.
I can.
To my knowledge.
I can avoid playing it.
USAopoly has the collector's edition Futurama Monopoly up for pre-order on their website through the end of September.
Oh, the hell with that. Buying it. That's my first...
Your first Monopoly game. Monopoly Futurama Collector's Edition features a one-of-a-kind game board with custom artwork created by the Futurama team. And for a limited time, it will also include 7 collectible tokens, including a Golden Bender token voted on by the fans and Leela's boot.
Her what?
Boot.
Oh, boots with a T. Gotcha.
Their description reads, "Good news, everyone. The World of Tomorrow now features the board game of yesterday. Grab your holophoner for some virtual reality in the year 3000. Buy properties across the four corners of the universe and the game board as you hobnob with huggable industrialist mom, dance with a robot devil, and take a mutated plunge into Sewer City. But mind the hypnotoad, or else do not pass go. Do not collect 200 Professor Land fun bucks. Custom resi domes and people hives replace traditional houses and hotels. Include 7 collectible tokens voted on by Futurama fans. The Golden Bender, Hypnotoad, Brain Slug, Seymour, the Planet Express ship, the What If Machine, and Leela's Boot. Monopoly Futurama Collector's Edition can be pre-ordered for $39.95 at the USAopoly website."
All right.
Hey, you know, Golden Bender, what can I say?
I don't know. It just sounds so drastically different than any other Monopoly I've ever encountered. I'm not sure if I could possibly learn how to play it, even if I were a Monopoly pro.
Just remember, there's no money for landing on free parking.
That's right. Never has been. And don't loan any of those fun bucks out to other players. It just makes the game longer.
It's long enough as it is. Most Monopoly games that I've ever played usually end with people unconscious or saying, "Okay, I have to go home now."
Yep, they just slip off into their own void.
Right. Ah, well.
North Star Games brings you a game where crappy birthdays are cooler than happy birthdays. Crappy Birthday, an apples-to-apples type game that Elliot is going to review in just a few moments. We'll be arriving in stores. In fact, it may be in stores already. If not, it'll be there in a few days. 3-day players gather around to give one another bad gifts. Here's wishing you a crappy birthday, the frenetic card game where it's fun to give bad gifts. In Crappy Birthday, players are dealt 5 gift cards. When it's your turn, it's your birthday, and everybody gives you a crappy gift from their hand. You shuffle the cards, turn them over one by one, and pick the gift you dislike the most. And the player who gave you that gift earns a point and a poke in the eye. The first player to 3 points and pokes wins. I'm joking about the poke in the eye.
Yeah. So what am I going to review now? I spent 15 hours researching this game.
Playing Crappy Birthday. You spent more time playing that game than the muscular dystrophy telethon will be on tonight.
Does it have Jerry Lewis?
No, they kicked him out.
Man.
They kicked Jerry out. Oh, that's why all these people were really mad. And a lot of guests were like, "Hey, Jerry's not going to be there. I don't care if you got a wheeled Jerry out there in an oxygen tent. The Labor Day telethon is Jerry Lewis."
I got to admit.
And you know, they cut that down to 6 hours. Don't you remember when we were young? I mean, not even when we were kids. I mean, we were in our 20s and it was all weekend. It was like 3 days. And the best part, I always thought when I was a kid, was when you'd get towards the end of it and Jerry was like just so manic because, number one, I don't know what kind of drugs he was on, but he was also sleep deprived and everything. Everything else. And I thought, gosh, he could just snap at any minute. He may kill someone here if he doesn't hit that $2 million in this past hour or whatever.
Oh, my God. Get out of here.
Sorry.
Hey, the French love him. What can I tell you?
Oh,
that's Jerry Louise. Oh, comedic master.
AEG, yes.
Yes.
If you haven't had a chance to pick up some of the promotional cards for Nightfall and Thunderstone,
you're out of luck,
because I've got them all. AEG has some available right now in their web store. For $1, you can order the Nightfall promo pack, and the Nightfall promo pack features... Sorry.
What does it feature, man? Don't leave me hanging.
Lisaveta Florescu and Shadow 7. 2 new cards that will create new chaining opportunities and bring new strategy and abilities to your minions of the night.
Wait a second, I don't have those cards.
Well, they're in the Nightfall promo pack.
So I could get them for $1 at AEG, or I could go to eBay and get them for $20.
Of course.
Right.
Each pack contains 7 copies of each of the cards plus 1 draft card for each of them. The dividers for these cards were included in the original Nightfall base game. And for $2, you can order the Thunderstone promo pack. The pack includes the Blade Trap, the Death Sentinel, Haruli the Hero, Mammoth, and the Vision. which actually sounds kind of like a superhero group to me. Both promo packs are limited quantity, so if you're interested, I would act now.
Now!
Well, finish listening to the show.
No! If you're online, you're listening to the show, open a new tab and get over to alzerac.com and buy it. Buy it, buy it, buy it now. I'm serious. I mean, for a buck, how can you go wrong? Those are some sweet promos. Or you could go, like I said, on eBay and get it for 20, or buy it from Board Game Geek for $5. Our last piece of gaming news concerns us.
Us?
Us, that's right. Yes, you and I. Well, and a lot of companies, and the ability for someone to walk away with, I don't know, about $500 worth of free games. It's our birthday, but someone else is going to get all the presents. That's right. In conjunction with many of our friends in the industry, we put together a bit of a scavenger hunt in which you'll actually visit other websites to find the answer or answers to a particular question that we've included on the website. We have loads of goodies to give away. And the most exciting part, not only is who we already have on board, but as the contest goes on, we do have other companies who are joining in. So if you go and you fill out the question form, the entry form now, as we add more companies, you don't have to worry about answering their questions because you already filled one out. So the longer you wait to enter, the more work you're going to have to do to enter the contest. True. Anyway, let's get down to the swag. All the rules are on the website. It's obvious where it's at. We've got a little ad box there. We have Alzerac Entertainment Group, our friends over at AEG, are providing a copy of Nightfall, as well as Martial Law, the expansion to Nightfall. Who else do we have, Elliot?
We've got Days of Wonder, who's offering up Small World Underground, which you can read the review right on our website and see that it is spectacular.
Spectacular. Was that a word you used in the actual review?
I have no idea.
I only wrote it for lunch.
Yep, see?
From Fantasy Flight Games, we have Gears of War, the board game, which is not even out in stores yet, but you can score yourself a free copy.
Nice. We also have No Retreat, the Russian Front from GMT, the new deluxe edition of the two-player Victory Point Game 2008 CSR Award nominee war game.
It is a good one, too. We'll have a review of that coming up very soon, because I do have a copy of that. We just keep talking about Crappy Birthday. Dun, dun. That's the song that always pops into my head whenever I think of this game. Happy Birthday. I even told Luke Warren over at North Star Games. I think it was in my interview that every time I think of that game's name, that song pops into my head. But you can get a copy of it following Elliot's review.
That's right. You can also get a copy of Word on the Street from Out of the Box. And it's the party case, Word on the Street. Woo! So you can carry it around to your next party.
That's right. It comes in a canvas bag. It's a deluxe canvas carrying case, and you get an additional timer. Square Shooters has joined the fun, and you can get a copy of their deluxe edition, which includes 9 Square Shooters dice, 42 shootout cards, 200 scorekeeping chips, a dice cup, a deck of playing cards, and luckily some instructions so you know how to play the game.
And there's many ways to play the game, actually. I actually got that table last night and had a pretty good time. I'll have a review.
Of course.
There's also Telestrations from USAopoly. By now, almost everybody in the world knows about Telestrations, which is a lot of fun. And, you know, here's your chance to get it for nothing.
For nothing, along with all this other great swag, because we also have Dawn of the Zeds from Victory Point Games, which I had recently reviewed, and it is spectacular.
Spectacular.
Although I did not use that word in the actual review, but it is excellent. It is my favorite States of Siege game from Victory Point Games. It's probably right up there with We Must Tell the Emperor in Nemo's War is my favorite game from VPG.
That's right.
And I think we also have one last company
on board.
That's
right. We also have Stronghold Games, and they are going to be offering up Core Worlds, which is not out yet, which won't be out for a while, so you won't get it until they actually get the pre-order copies in. But as soon as the first human being that has ordered a copy of that game gets it, you will get it too.
I don't know if they'll get it as soon as that first human being gets it, because I would think pre-orders.
There you go.
Okay. My understanding is Core World should be out sometime in November or possibly early December. But you will get a copy if you are the winner.
That's right. Sweet.
I thought it was pretty sweet. And all you have to do is swing by our awesome companies who are working with us. Take a quick peek at their website. We didn't make the questions impossible to find the answers to. All you have to do is fill out the entry form and poof, you're entered into the contest. Pretty
sweet. Wait, aren't we supposed to be asking for money or something now?
Yes, the Gaming Gang Foundation is looking for donation. No. When do we ever ask anybody for money?
I don't ask nobody for nothing.
That's right. We provide all of this fun and entertainment. Yeah, right, entertainment. For absolutely zip, zilch, zero. Although it would be nice if more people would like us on Facebook or join our guild on BoardGameGeek. But yes, the only thing we ever ask is spread the word about the Gaming Gang, and we're all good. We'll never ask you for a single solitary penny to swing by the website or anything else. That's the way we do it.
It's the way we roll, man.
So what do you say we move on to our reviews?
All right, that sounds like a plan to me.
And now it's time for the Gaming Gang's game review. Try saying that 10 times fast.
I'm not going to try.
The first game I'm going to talk about is Cthulhu Gloom from Atlas Games.
I'm feeling sad already.
Oh, Keith Baker is the designer, and it just came out.
The guy who played R2-D2? Oh, sorry, Kenny Baker.
Ken Baker.
There you go. Yeah, it was Kenny Baker. Sorry.
Oddly enough, after learning and playing Redekai, I've come now to a second game with transparent cards.
Well, wouldn't this be the third game?
Third. Cthulhu Gloom is the new version of the original Gloom, but with a Lovecraftian bent. So yes, this is the third.
Okay.
With transparent. These two games have different card backs, so you won't be mixing them together, as opposed to the claim that they make on the Atlas Games website.
What?
Yep.
Liars.
The basic premise of the game is that you're in control of one of four families, including Miskatonic University, the Whateleys, the Village of Innsmouth, and the Arkham Sanitarium.
Of course, out of which only one of those would really be a family.
Right. The Whateleys. Wasn't that a show on CBS back in the 70s?
Moving on up a bit. Oh, sorry.
Each family has five members, and your job is to make sure that every member of your family lives the most miserable life possible and then dies.
So it's sort of like your family.
I have to point out that this made more sense.
Even if your wife heard it, she knows I'm kidding.
I have to point out that this made more sense in the original Gloom, as it was explained in the storyline that your family members believe that if they are tormented and miserable in life, then they will have the most glorious afterlife. Of course, this doesn't really fit with Cthulhu Gloom, but it does fit.
The staff at Miskatonic University don't feel the same way?
Just don't think so. In my exposure to them, they're a pretty somber bunch. But, yeah. You know.
In my dealings, I don't think they want to be that miserable.
No, they try to be happy. You know. It does fit with an overall Lovecraftian theme. I mean, how many H.P. Lovecraft characters live to enjoy a happy old age?
One?
Maybe Randolph Carter?
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the only one I'm thinking of.
So while your motivation for making the family miserable and then killing them off may not be apparent, it's still very much in theme. You lay your five members of your family out in front of you on the table. And if you're playing the five-player game, then you pull one member out of each family and make a kind of a misfit family. And so every player would actually start with four members instead of five.
Why do having four members of a family make you misfits?
Because you're taking one member from each of the actual families to form this fifth player.
Ah, got it.
See?
Gotcha. Okay.
My daughter actually had a problem with the families themselves. She wasn't happy that each family had exactly one female character, and she said it was sexist.
It's sexy.
I did explain that there's not a lot of female Lovecraftian characters. Even though she was partially joking, I did think it bugged her on some level.
He was sort of a misogynist, I believe.
Very much so. Okay, the Innsmouth family actually has two female members. Unfortunately, one of them is a fish person.
A deep one?
Yes. I leave it to you to make your own decision. There's five story cards included, too, and story cards are shuffled and then two are randomly selected to use in the game. A story card can be gained by having the right number of icons showing on your family member's cards. You can claim the card and gain its benefits as long as you hold on to it. But certain event cards can cause you to lose a claimed story card. For example, the Call of Cthulhu story card allows you to count your living characters towards your final score at the end of the game. This is a big bonus if you're not the first person out. Okay, hint. The story cards are the cards with the green text. It did take me a few minutes to figure that out. Okay, they do mention it in the rules, but, you know.
You missed it.
Tiny.
But you found it.
Yeah, it took a while. But, you know, a minute or two. The rest of the cards are made up of modifier cards, event cards, and untimely death cards. Modifier cards will have up to three icons along the left side of the card. And each one contains a number that will either add or subtract from your pathos score. Your pathos score is the total of all the three icons that determines the value of each family member during the end of game scoring.
Are the female family members worth less? Because that would really be sexist.
I didn't look. Hey! During the game, you'll want to play cards with negative modifiers on your own characters and those with positive numbers on the other player's characters. Event cards can cause some event to happen or can cancel another event. Events can include bringing a dead character back to life, removing modifier cards on characters, and so on. Untimely death cards are what you use to kill off a character.
In an untimely manner.
Exactly. As, of course, most Lovecraftian characters all suffered untimely deaths or went mad. If you have a family member whose score you think is low enough, you can kill them off to lock in those points. You can also kill off another player's character as long as the score is negative. So you'd want to kill off one of your own family members if they're sitting at around a negative 45 score.
Wow.
And kill off another player's family member if they're sitting around, say, negative 5.
You're trying to kill off another family's member before they can really boost up their miserable score.
Exactly.
Okay.
Each player draws 5 cards to make up their hand, and the person who had the most insane day goes first. Each turn, you can play 2 cards, and you can only play an untimely death card as your first play. After your 2 plays, you draw back up to 5 cards. There's a lot of cards that have special effects, such as increasing or decreasing your hand limit, discarding or drawing cards, you know, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
These effects can be strategically played to really cause problems for your opponent. The cards also have story icons on the right side to give you an indication as to what the heck your family member is getting themselves involved in. They also come up in various card effects and can give you a bonus to your pathos score if you have the right icons when you kill off a certain character. They suggest that you try to tell a story with the cards you play. Each card has a small phrase that you can build on using your story icons to describe the entire miserable life of your family member. For example, if Wilbur Whately was stalked by shadows, you could explain that he was headed to the university to do some research to figure out what old Whately discovered in a diary. Unfortunately, the shadows followed him and drove him a bit mad, and then the very next turn he was eaten by frogs, and thus would be investigating no more. Adding some story into your game is what makes it a more fun thematic experience. You can easily play without doing this, but it becomes a lot more mechanical.
Mm-hmm.
I always encourage the storytelling, and there's no right or wrong way to do it. You just have fun with it. You continue taking turns and playing cards on top of cards until one family member kills off its last member. Then the game is over, and you add up all of the points that are showing on your dead family member's cards. The family with the lowest score wins the game. It is just a Cthulhu version of Gloom, so mm-hmm. If you like Gloom, you should like Cthulhu Gloom. It isn't really as funny as Gloom can be. It's a little bit more somber, as one would expect in any mythos-based game.
And it seems to be a little bit of a disconnect, too.
What do you mean?
Well, because in the first Gloom, I haven't played either one, but in the first Gloom, you have a family. As you had mentioned previously, it made more sense that, yes, your family thinks that it, the worse their life is on Earth in the afterlife, they're going to have it that much better.
Yes, that's exactly right.
But, right. You know,
Arkham University.
Right. Yeah.
Or Miskatonic University. Yeah. It's a little bit more spread out. Understood. It's all still very tongue-in-cheek, and it's a fun way to start or end the evening of gaming. If you find that your games are taking too long, just use one less family member and it'll shorten the game time.
Mm-hmm.
One problem we ran into a couple of times is that the discard pile eventually gets so small because you're using up all of the cards as you play that you start seeing the same events come up over and over, which can get a little annoying. And some of the card interactions can get a little fiddly, where you would think, okay, how the heck does this work? You can figure them out, but sometimes it can be a head-scratcher. A couple of times I wasn't sure if a particular card had really killed off the character. It isn't rocket science, though, so we didn't fret about it too much. Overall, I liked Gloom, and so I like Cthulhu Gloom, especially with the theme I so much enjoy.
Do you like Cthulhu Gloom more than you like the original Gloom?
I think I do, just because of the Cthulhu theme.
Right.
But the kids, they enjoyed the original Gloom more.
Okay. So if you have no real love for Lovecraft or Cthulhu, the mythos, you might be better served to pick up the original.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay.
They didn't not enjoy it. They still enjoyed it. They just liked the original Gloom a little more.
I'm going to take a look at Field Commander Napoleon from Dan Versen Games. Designed by Dan Versen, released just recently. In fact, I got my copy just a few days before I left for Gen Con. It is a solitaire game, and you will take on the role of, guess who? Napoleon Bonaparte, as he goes through his entire career of conquest and eventual defeat.
Will you play his entire career?
Yes.
Nice.
I'm going to start off by saying Field Commander Napoleon is huge. It's massive. It's ginormous. This puppy is one monster game, and it's heavy. Elliot likes to joke around that you could kill someone with a big old game box or components of games. With Field Commander Napoleon, you probably could take down two people if they were standing next to each other. And you could do it with ease if you had a pretty good aim.
So I can come with a disclaimer saying, please do not throw this off of a roof?
Not even off of a roof. Just don't throw it at someone, even if they're 10 feet away, 5 feet away. It's the biggest and grandest title ever produced by Dan Versen Games. And I know this because Dan says so. The box alone is about 2.5 times as deep as a standard war game. So if you think of, let's say, for an example, GMT's releases for the most part, multiply those boxes by about 2.5 times the depth. If you do own Command and Colors Napoleonics, then the FCN box is just a tiny bit shallower, but there aren't loads of wooden blocks filling it. So what does fill it? Maps, as in 7 mounted map boards, 6 counter sheets, a battle sheet, rule book, and assorted play aids. I'll start off and say that the components to FCN are top-notch. The counters aren't overly cluttered with information, so each type of unit has a nice-sized image displayed. They're also of nice thickness, and the counters are actually laminated, so they're going to hold up to multiple replays. The game maps are also quality, with pertinent information prominently displayed for each of the 11 campaigns you can take on throughout Napoleon's career. You want to keep in mind that some of these historical campaigns were fought over the same regions, so a few of the maps are utilized or reused more than once, but each map does have the specific info for those campaigns marked on it. Some folks might quibble about the map art because it's a bit plain. It's just brown with a few items of interest marked on it, like cities or mountains. Personally, I liked the design decision simply for the fact that historically, a commander wouldn't be carrying around a highly detailed panoramic view of a country in his hip pocket, especially not in the late 18th or early 19th century. You're going to play out each campaign with two maps, one which depicts the campaign area. So, for an example, the Italian campaign of 1796, which also is the campaign map for the campaign of 1800, you're also going to use a battlefield sheet. People who pre-ordered FCN received a mounted battlefield map as well as the sheet. The rulebook is really nicely put together, and it's got loads of illustrations and examples of play. There are a few sticky spots that are going to require a reread or three before you nail down the meaning, but all in all, once you start playing, things start to make sense. So here's the breakdown of each turn of the campaign. You're going to advance the game turn marker. So each campaign has a set length and various victory conditions associated with it. If you haven't achieved these conditions by a particular turn, you lose. The maps also show the historical timeline so you can find out if you did better or worse or the same as Bonaparte did in real life. The French move. That's pretty easy. Any of your mobile forces, fortifications, and garrisons always stay in place, can move to an adjacent area. Then you'll resolve battles. And I'll go into a lot more of this in detail a little later on. Then you have the French forced march. So you get to move your mobile forces once again. And you can even move those who stayed put during that first movement phase. You're going to resolve battles again because maybe your forced marches have ended in contact with the enemy. So now you have new battles. Then you'll have the French resupply. This is where you have an opportunity to reinforce damaged forces as well as purchase new forces and scouts. Then you have enemy orders, and you'll roll on a chart to determine what each enemy force in an area is going to do. It's possible that enemy forces made up of different nationalities could break up and go off after completely different objectives. Then you resolve battles. So yes, there's even more fighting, and then the enemy gets to resupply.
No.
Yes. It sounds like FCN is pretty easy, as there aren't a crushing number of phases each campaign turn. But don't be fooled by that, as the real meat and potatoes of the game is in the actual battles, and they are fairly detailed. So I'll talk about that. Before the battle gets underway, you're going to have a few items that need to be addressed. You're going to roll for Fog of War, and this can be good or bad for the French, as you can gain additional supply points, which are used for buying reinforcements, scouts, and a lot of other things. You could inflict a hit on an enemy force before the battle even gets underway, or the exact opposite could happen to you given a bad roll. The Fog of War chart also determines how many battle turns the engagement's going to last. You check for envelopment. Normally, I check for envelopment before I do anything else, because if one side's combined combat rating of all their forces is 3 times that of the enemy, there is no battle, and the overwhelmed forces are destroyed. You better not let this happen to you with Napoleon present, because anytime he's alone in an area without forces, you automatically lose. Then you determine the number of battle plans, and battle plans drive the mechanics of combat, and they add a lot of spice to the goings-on. Forces have default orders that are fairly limited, but battle plans allow for more in-depth options and abilities. Enemy forces also get a set number of battle plans, whereas the French get a certain number and gain more if Napoleon is present, and they can purchase more by using supply points. Speaking of Napoleon being present, he also brings to the battlefield what are known as insights. You can trade in French battle plans for insights on a one-to-one basis. And there's special modifiers or abilities that will affect the entire battlefield as opposed to a battle plan, which only affects a single force. Then you place the French forces and follow that up by placing the enemy forces. Then you're ready to do battle. As the battle commences, each force receives a battle plan. Now, I know you're thinking, well, gosh, I've got a whole lot more forces than battle plans. What am I supposed to do? As I just mentioned, the battle plans have additional abilities or modifiers given to an individual force, yet all the forces have some default orders that they can always perform. So it's not like they're sitting around waiting for a courier to arrive to tell them to move forward 50 yards. The French assign battle plans as they see fit, whereas the enemy's battle plans are actually drawn from a cup and then assigned by the player. This is what will make or break the enjoyment of the game, and I'll get to that in just a minute too. But the French have a distinct advantage when it comes to the battle plans. The battle plans for the two sides, for the French and their enemies, are completely different, and the enemy battle plans are actually more of them than for the French. Mainly, this is due to the player knowing what they want their forces to do, and the mechanics of the game trying to level the playing field for the AI opponent. Rather than getting into a blow-by-blow of each plan, let's just say that they cover a variety of actions from cavalry charges to firing more than a whiff of grape shot to forming square and everything in between. Based on the battle plans and default actions, the opposing forces will attack, take damage, fall back, re-engage, and go back and forth until either one side is destroyed, routed, or the number of turns previously determined is reached. If you run out of turns, you'll roll on the withdrawal chart to see who might retreat, or even if a new battle is started with the same forces.
Do the forces carry over from battle to battle? Like, yes. If somebody dies in one camp, really?
Yes. So what'll happen is you can lose forces, but you can also repurchase them again with your supply points.
I see.
It's not as if you continually have tons and tons of supply points that you can just throw around. The French, and neither can their enemies, even less so for their enemies, they can't just continually throw troops into a meat grinder, because you use the supply points for a lot of different things. One is to buy what are known as scouts, and the scouts give you the ability to re-roll certain rolls on different charts to try to get a better result. So if you rolled on the fog of war and you rolled really bad, and all of a sudden the French are in a much more precarious position than they should be, you could use a scout that you bought to re-roll that to maybe get a better result, because you have scouts that were able to provide your commander with better information, so that didn't take place, the original roll.
Okay, cool.
I'm going to point out that it's possible when you generate a battle, maybe it's only two turns, and nobody even fires a shot. It does happen, and it's also possible to have the battle rejoined through the withdrawal result, a forced march, because remember, the French get that second movement phase, or when the enemy gets the move. This might bother some people, as you find yourself setting up a lot of battles that don't play out to decisive conclusions, or you spend multiple turns trying to tie down enemy forces while the campaign turns tick away and dwindle down to a precious few. Because most of the campaigns, if you do not get your campaign objectives completed by a certain turn, you lose. I really enjoy the game, but I'm going to point out a few different things, because what you think of Field Commander Napoleon is going to be based really on what kind of solitaire game player you are. And I'll explain. If you're the type of solitaire player who fudges die rolls or re-rolls things, where, you know, well, I've been playing this for 45 minutes and now I've got this crappy roll and I'm supposed to lose the game, but you know what? I'm going to re-roll this and see if I get... You know what? You're not going to like FCN. You won't. Because you have to do a lot of things for your opponents. And I'll give you a great example. The battle plans.
Mm-hmm.
You get to assign, as the French, you assign the battle plans however you see fit. You draw battle plans for your enemy. Now, you could conceivably, and there are some rules explaining how you should go about assigning the different battle plans for the enemy, but they're not real in depth. So you could conceivably screw the AI to make it easier for the French, which would not make it realistic, and in the end, makes the game much easier than it would normally be.
Yeah, and what would be the point of playing?
Right, exactly. And that's what I'm pointing out. If you're a solitaire gamer who enjoys a challenge, who likes, for an example, let's say a victory point game, States of Siege game, you're going to stick to the rules, you will really dig FCN. Now, of course, I used VPG as an example. This game is, of course, nothing like a victory point game. It is very, very detailed. It's not 6 pages of rules. It's 20 some pages of rules. There are a lot of great examples, but it is going to take a few playthroughs before you get stuck in and you understand all the different elements of the game. It comes across as being much easier than it actually is, or a lot lighter, I guess I would say, than the game actually is. I think this is an awesome game. This is definitely going into our top rated games, as far as I'm concerned, as a solitaire gamer.
Mm-hmm.
Other people out there may not dig the game as much as I did, because you do have to have some disconnect and play what's best for your enemy. What would make sense that they would issue orders, or how they would move during their movement, because you'll roll on a chart. It'll tell you where some of these forces, you know, should go, but you have a lot of leeway in where they're going.
Yeah.
Overall, I think Field Commander Napoleon, fantastic game from Dan Versen Games. I guess we would say if you're a solitaire gamer who can play a game honestly, you're really going to dig it. If you're somebody who wants to fudge die rolls and re-roll things, you're probably not going to like it because you're not going to get the same out of it as someone else would.
Nice. The next game I'm going to talk about is, as we mentioned earlier, Crappy Birthday.
Crappy Birthday. Crappy birthday. Bah, 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 bah. I wish I knew who did that song and what that song actually is.
I don't remember.
I don't either. It's some obscure punk rock group, if I remember right.
It's published by North Star Games and was designed by Brian Weinstock and Amy Weinstock.
The Weinstocks.
The Weinstocks.
And it's always good to have a good stock of wine.
That's right. Crappy Birthday is the new party game from North Star Games. It comes in a square box designed to look like a birthday present. The game retails for just $14.99, so it would need to be pretty crappy indeed for you not to get your money's worth out of it.
It would have to be pretty darn crappy.
Happily, this is not the case. There are 200 full-color, large-size cards. Thin, yes. So they are susceptible to bending. The rules are short, as it is a really simple game. Each player takes 5 cards from the deck. I don't bother shuffling, as it would be a difficult task considering there's 200 of them. And you really don't need to, as once you make your way through the cards, it does get progressively less fun. So you're only going to go through these so many times. You need to understand the intent of the game. This game was designed to be brought along to a party and given as a gift, rather than, say, the traditional bottle of wine or something like that. This is one of the reasons for the low price point for the game. $15 for a gift is nothing, you know, and if you get an hour or two of fun out of it, then it's well worth it.
I got to start throwing more parties, man.
Yeah, see, gifts.
Score some swag.
You want?
Usually, I have a party. People come over and they're like, "Where's the beer?
You got any of those little hot dogs?" The game wasn't designed for replayability. It's more designed for an evening of fun. After the players draw their cards, someone is selected to be the gift receiver. We used a coaster to pass around to keep track of who the gift receiver is, which of course led me to think this would make a good drinking game. But drinking aside, everyone except the gift receiver looks at their hand of cards and secretly selects the gift that they believe would be the worst gift to give to the gift receiver. All of the selected cards are shuffled face down and spread out in front of the receiver face up. And then they select the one gift that they would hate the most. Whoever played that card gets 1 point and places that card in the score pile next to it. Every player draws back up to 5 cards and then play passes clockwise to the next person. This process is repeated until someone gets 3 points and declared the winner, which I guess in this case is the person who's the best at selecting crappy birthday presents.
I guess that would be correct.
Okay. It's really just the person who got the lousiest cards and knows the other players the best. You see, not all of the gifts would be considered crappy birthday presents by any means.
No, not at all.
Some of them would actually be loved by certain people. So you really need to take into consideration the personality of the person you're picking the gift for. For example, you've got 5 cards. Running with the Bulls. Bring your Nikes. Colored contact lenses. Wear these at your next party. Scrapbooking Club. Meet with them once a week for a year.
I'd hate that one.
Snowmaking Machine. Run every December. Guarantees a white Christmas.
Could I use that here in Arizona right now where it's about 113 degrees? I'll just stand in front of it.
Oh,
thank you.
Or Security Bot, who roams around the yard and zaps intruders.
I like that one too.
See, special note, you'll notice that the additional text with each card does make a difference. So you make sure you read the whole card. If you think about it, which one of those would be the worst gift for granny, for your teenage daughter, for your wife? As you can see, you will have different answers for each person. In fact, in some cases, it would be far easier to pick the best gift for someone than the worst. It's natural to want to do this, and I've seen it suggested on other websites, and it makes sense to play a few games picking the worst and a few games picking the best, so go for it. As a matter of fact, I'll go this one better. If you want a little more strategy and like to mix the game up, try this variant. Play the game as usual, but each turn select one card as the crappiest gift for the gift receiver, and then select a second card that would make the best gift for someone at the table. Place this second gift in a stack next to you so that each player has a second stack of cards. Then, at the end of your turn, you draw 2 cards instead of 1. You keep playing until the first person reaches 3 points. Then, nobody else draws any more cards. discard your hand, and each player picks up the second stack of cards that they've been building throughout the first part of the game. This is your new hand of cards. You don't draw anymore from the draw deck. Keep playing the game, except now you select the best gift to give the gift receiver. You'll slowly run out of cards, and the person who has the most points when all of the cards are played wins the game. This allows you to strategize which cards to keep, who to play them on, and it lets you recycle the cards in your hand faster during the first part of the game, because you can end up with a hand of all cool stuff that nobody would hate. So being able to recycle some of these out faster can be a big help.
Are you complaining that a party game relies on luck?
No, I'm not complaining at all. I'm providing an additional variant.
I'm kidding. I'm just saying that, I mean, that's every party game. Every party game is luck.
It's all luck.
There's never strategy involved.
I take that back. Wits and Wagers.
Yes. Okay. Well, most people do not play Wits and Wagers utilizing any kind of a strategy. Most people just try to get the correct answer. The strategy comes from you placing your betting tokens.
Yes.
And the ability to move them around at the last second.
And so, thus, there is some strategy.
Yeah, but most people don't play that way.
What?
Trust me, in all the times I've played Wits and Wagers with different people, most of them do not start doing the whole, oh, I'm going to move my bet now, except me.
All the times you yanked my ears.
Sorry, I don't know where that came from.
I don't know what that was even in reference to.
Roger Rabbit?
Oh, okay. I'm not yanking your ears, man. I'm just saying. Sure. I mean, that's a variant in itself to make it more interesting for different gamers. But I think that defeats the purpose of what the game is actually there to do. The game's just a filler. It's a quick filler. Have some laughs. Ha ha ha. Moving right along.
Right. But there's going to be some people who are going to play with not just family. They may have a few other gamers involved and they want to throw something else into it. I'm just throwing it out there.
Hey, I'm right with you, man. I understand that. The serious gamers probably aren't going to bust this game out, though.
The game is fun. It offers an evening of laughs, and it's inexpensive. It will have some longevity if you play it with different groups, but with the same people, it loses its amusement factor after a couple of plays. The game is great with a group of adults or older teens, but not really intended for kids because the subtleties of gift selection would be lost on most of them.
Right.
Overall, it's a solid buy for its intended use. And it's a good time.
I'm right with you. I think Crappy Birthday is a fun party game. It really pulls off its intended use. So does Apples to Apples. It is what it is. Yeah. I think it's a very, very fun game. And I think it would be a really nice gift to bring to a party if you know those kind of people play party games. If you brought it and your hosts are expecting some booze, you're going to be in trouble. The hell is this?
Where's my bottle of Barefoot you were going to bring?
Would you go to Spencer's Gifts and pick this up? You were supposed to go to the liquor store, man. Where's the Jack Daniels? Well, you know, this was $15 too, and I don't care. Where's the booze?
All right, I won't bring it to your birthday party.
All right, I believe the last review we're going to have, and it's going to be a fairly quick review, is of Reaper Miniatures' line of pre-painted figures, their legendary encounters. Mm. These are going to appeal to the miniature gamers out there, as well as those folks who are into fantasy role-playing games that like to have figures depicted, those who like to do the, you know, the whole layouts of the maps and so forth. I'm not one of those kind of role players. I've never been one where we bust out the graph paper and, okay, well, this room's 60 by 20. And no, I always was into the painting, the visual picture. The actual dimensions of a room didn't matter to me. But these figures are 25 millimeter. They're all fantasy minis. They're cast in plastic. They're pre-painted and already assembled. They are of a softer plastic, so there is give to them. They're non-collectible, so you get what you order. It's not as if you're opening up a booster pack and you go, man, you know, I really would like to get that ghost. And you have to go through $150 worth of booster packs to get that
but
ghost.
But I got the ghost.
Maybe. But I got the lame version of the ghost. I wanted the ultra rare version of the ghost. I guess that'll be about another $1,000 worth of boosters there. Regardless, they're ideal for wargamers and role players who want ready-to-use monsters or troops that they're not going to go through the effort of painting. There are only 35 figures in the line. They do cover a great variety of the different kind of monsters that you would encounter. Skeletons and orcs and trolls, zombies. There's a minotaur that's really nice. I had the opportunity to actually get some of these figures and check them out when I was at Origins as well as Gen Con. They have a lot going for them. Their sculpts are pretty nice. The pre-paint overall is some of the best quality I've seen, especially at the price point that they're available at. The vast majority of these figures fall right in the range of about $5 each, right around $4.99, depending on the size. For an example, the Minotaur of the Maze figure, which is a bit larger than most of the other figures would be, is $6.29. The largest figures are the Great Worm and the Young Dragon. Those are $6.99.
Oh, it's mad.
So price-wise, when you compare, granted, they are plastic. They're not lead. But compare that, for an example, to an unpainted figure from any number of companies out there in lead, 28 millimeter, which those 3 millimeters don't make that big of a difference. They're looking at $13, $14 for a single figure.
Yeah, yep.
And we're not talking about a bigger monster like a young dragon or a minotaur. We're talking about an orc with a sword. So you get a lot of value with the Legendary Encounters figures. I really like them quite a lot. Now, being someone who enjoys painting miniatures, there are a few things that I would point out that other mini painters might consider doing. The pre-paint jobs are pretty good. In fact, for pre-paints, they're really good. Now, are they the same quality as anyone with some practice painting miniatures is going to put together? No. And I especially dislike the metallics that are used on the figures. What I would recommend is taking each of these figures, giving them a light wash of, say, black or brown, just to kind of fill in some of the areas. There is a little bit of paint overlay. Not a lot, but a little bit. It'll help cover that up. It'll add a little more punch to the figures themselves. And I would go, and especially the silver, the metal metallics, don't like them at all. Repaint those with various different metallic paints that you already have. You will really, really punch up the look of the figures. And still, you're getting a sweet deal on all these different figures really cheap. Give me an example. You can get 3 little kobold figures for $6. Go over to somebody else's website and try to pick up 3 kobolds, and it's probably going to run you about $15 to $20. Yeah. The biggest selling point for the Legendary Encounters is that they are so inexpensively priced. One of the drawbacks is it does have a limited line of figures. There's only 35, and Reaper only releases anywhere from 4 to 10 a year. I love Reaper miniatures. I wish I could paint the minis a lot faster so I could get some more reviews done of their actual different lines of lead figures for people to see. They are upcoming, but I did want to say that the Legendary Encounters, in my opinion, if you're a war gamer who wants a lot of extra troops, skeletons, orcs, so forth, you can't go wrong. If you're a role player and you want to use some of these monsters as well to go with your other figures, definitely a serious, serious buy. You want to go to ReaperMini.com and check them out.
Nice. And who doesn't love to pick up the little figure and go, rawr, across the table?
I believe only you do that.
Ah, contraire, my
friend. It's weird. When we were playing Twilight Struggle, I mean, you would pick up like a 4 influence counter and be like, rawr. And I'm like, what the hell is he doing? Has he lost his mind?
Rawr. I would just like to remind everyone to go check out the birthday bash celebration at our website.
Where would somebody find that website?
On the internet. Oh,
yes.
Wait, sorry.
Okay, thank you.
www.thegaminggang.com.
That sounds familiar.
Yep, that's us.
I would just like to say, as we finish up the show, thanks to everyone out there who's come to visit the website, who listened to the show. I know a lot of people who visit the site don't listen to the podcast, and kind of vice versa. I'm not sure why, whatever. But we really do appreciate it. Our first year has been an unmitigated success. There's no doubt about that whatsoever. So I do want to say thank you. And because you're going to be listening to this and it is Labor Day. I hope everyone is having a wonderful Labor Day and a very safe Labor Day holiday as well. We'll be back in a couple of weeks. We'll have plenty of other goodies. And as Elliot mentioned, check out the contest and keep your eyes peeled because we're going to have more goodies added to that very soon as well.
Nice.
Anything else, Mr. Miller?
Nope, we're good.
All right. Well, why don't you take us out?
You've been listening to the Gaming Gang Podcast with Jeff McAleer and Elliot Miller. If you'd like to know more about the topics or games we discussed in this episode, please visit our website at www.thegaminggang.com. If you would like to have your opinion heard or have a gaming issue you'd like us to discuss on a future podcast, you can visit the Gaming Gang Guild on BoardGameGeek or call us at 480-779-7365 and leave a message. If you enjoyed listening to our podcast, please rate us on iTunes. Some of the games discussed on our show were provided to the Gaming Gang in the form of review copies. On behalf of everyone here at the Gaming Gang, thanks for listening.